You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hope you can stay with us after 8 as we talk with a presidential historian about the articles of impeachment process and what it means for this moment in history. That's after 8. But right now, we're talking Brewers taking on the Washington Nationals tonight in the NL wildcard game, first pitch, 7:08. Are you a Brewers fan? Will you be watching tonight? Do you remember anything about previous seasons the Brewers made the playoffs? We're at 800-642-1234 for all things Brewers. J.R. Radcliffe is a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he hosts the Brewers podcast. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you. It's good to chat again.
So I understand you are in D.C. to cover the game. What is the atmosphere like? Because I should make the distinction here. You're not on Capitol Hill.
No, not at the moment. No, we're in the Navy Yards, not far from the ballpark. But it's hard to get a handle on what the atmosphere here is in terms of in terms of fan support right now. Just because we were there yesterday for sort of a media availability day, and obviously it's sort of empty stadium, not a lot of action around the ballpark. But I've been told that the crowds here can be pretty ridiculous and have been for some of these bigger games that the Nationals have played in the past. They're kind of a snake-bitten franchise. They've been to the playoffs 4 times and have not advanced out of the first round of games any of those times, and they had home field advantage every one of those times. So for some reason, this organization, which has had some pretty good players, hasn't worked deep into the playoffs. I think it sounds like the fan base is sort of wondering why.
They might be quite hungry tonight.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure they're going to bring it. It's obviously not to the road team's advantage, but plenty of road teams have won these wild card games before. When you get down to just a one winner take all battle, there's very little calculus that'll tell you how it's going to go. It could very easily be in the Brewers' favor, even though the pitching matchup doesn't favor them. The location doesn't favor them. There's a very strong likelihood they could win. There's no way to tell.
Well, the Brewers have made the playoffs now for the second year in a row. How significant is this for the Brewers?
It's a huge step forward for the organization. They had not done that since 1981 and 1982, 82 being the last time they advanced to the World Series. And, you know, there was a pretty lengthy period of time through the 90s where this was one of the worst franchises in baseball, in the American League and then the National League, and there just wasn't a lot going for them. And they've been able to build themselves, first through Doug Melvin, who brought them back to the playoffs for the first time in 26 years in 2008. Then they went again in 2011. They looked like they may be on trajectory to do the same thing in 2014 and 2017. But in a small market, it's really difficult to sustain success. You can't afford to make some of the big ticket free agent signings that some of the bigger franchises can, some of the bigger markets can, because if you miss on a guy, it could set you back even more. And they had a couple. They just had a couple years where it didn't come together, and it took more than just bouncing back the next year to recover from that. So this is a new dawn for them, and it's 2 years in a row now where they got super hot at the end of the season in September, two straight Septembers where they won 20 games, and that's very difficult to do. And so the formula might not be, it might require just a little bit of luck, a little bit of just crazy good baseball at the end of the season, but right now, this is a pretty good time to be a Milwaukee Brewers fan.
We're talking with J.R. Radcliffe. He's a sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's there in Washington, D.C. Ahead of tonight's game. You can join in. Are you a Brewers fan? Will you be watching tonight? What were the highlights of the season for you? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. J.R., step back for us tonight and explain what is at stake in tonight's matchup. What happens after this? This is do or die for the Brewers.
Yeah, before 2012, there was only one wild card team in both the National and the American League. So there's three divisions. You had division winners that made the playoffs, and then a fourth team that had the best record of those not already going to the playoffs. And then four teams per league, pretty simple. They both met in division league series 2-2, and then the winners met, and then the winner would go to the World Series. In 2012, it was decided that a fifth team in each league be added to the playoff roster with two wild card teams that met in this head-to-head winner-take-all format, one game only, one night only, and the winner then would advance to the division series. So it was just an added layer. It allowed sort of a greater emphasis on winning your division, giving you sort of the benefit of not having to endure that format. It also just expanded the postseason, which was pretty cool. The Brewers would not have been in the postseason if not for this new wrinkle that was introduced, because they would not have been the top wild card team. And so it's kind of baseball's just not really a game built on the backs of one outcome. It's not like the NFL where two teams meet and if one is clearly better than the other, they'll definitely win. In baseball, there's a lot of randomness. The worst team in the league can beat the best team fairly often. And so it is a little bit misleading and unfortunate in a way, because, you know, it doesn't really matter who the better team is. It just matters who wins sort of tonight's random game. But
if they win, they go to Los Angeles to face the Dodgers in the best of five.
Correct. Yeah. In this case, they would go face the top seed Los Angeles, and that would be a best of five series. Their next home game would be on Sunday in that case. But and that'll be if they are able to advance. That would be a very tough matchup. The Dodgers are the best team in the National League. It's pretty clear cut, and that would be difficult as well. But you know, if they don't win tonight, the season's over. They go home to Milwaukee and regroup for 2020.
Well, last month, Christian Yelich suffered that fractured kneecap in Miami. How did this affect the rest of the season for the Brewers?
I mean, it should have been the end because he is so good, and there's still a really good case that he should be the National League Most Valuable Player like he was last year. His numbers, if you look at sort of the advanced stats, he is the best player in the National League. So to lose him was pretty damaging, but somehow this Brewers team pulled it together. Their pitching was exceptional in September. They had a couple offensive guys step up in Yelich's absence, and they just kept winning and winning and winning without him. It was almost a little bit surreal. The pitching is coming from guys that I don't know if the Brewers even expected those guys to achieve the level they did. Jordan Lyles is a guy that they brought over at the trade deadline at the beginning of August, and he's been sensational since they got him. They follow a format that they did similar to last year. They don't let their starting pitchers go very deep into games, and that's a little bit against conventional wisdom. But it's
yeah.
Also
why
shown,
is that?
It's sort of a trend that's developing in baseball, where the idea, sort of the central idea, is you don't want to let hitters face a pitcher too many times, because eventually they get the timing down. Eventually they're able to hit a guy. So very aggressively, Brewers manager Craig Counsell doesn't let pitchers face batters a third time through the order, and so that usually leads to earlier exits for the starting pitcher. The bullpen takes over the bulk of the work. That's especially useful in September, when the rosters are a little bit bigger than they are during other parts of the season for many complicated reasons. But it is something that's enabled them to get on these hot streaks in September. They seem to use this philosophy perfectly. Washington does not operate that way. They've got sensational starting pitchers that are going to be expected to go six, maybe seven innings. The guy who's pitching for them tonight is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Really, this really could be argued the best pitcher of the past decade. He's got three Cy Young Awards, Max Scherzer. So it's a little bit of a clash of philosophy, but it has worked for the Brewers. It got them all the way within one game of the World Series last year, and there's no reason to stop now.
Yeah, right. So, you know, how are fans doing with these ups and downs? Are they sticking with their team?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a roller coaster, and I think there's sort of a built-in, I don't know, it's maybe not quite as fraught, because they were sort of left for dead, and I think everybody looked at the Brewers in July and even on September 1st and said, there's really no way that team can make the playoffs. There really wasn't. They hadn't shown that they could win multiple games in a row. They hadn't shown they could win even four or five games in a row, except for a couple of random times during the year, and then they went ahead and won 18 of 20. There was no data to show that was going to happen. Even if there was, it'd be preposterous to say, oh yeah, they'll win 18 of 20 and get right back into the playoff race. So I think for a lot of people, this is icing on the cake. I think a lot of people wouldn't have expected them to be here even as recently as 4 weeks ago.
Well, let's pause with this icing on the cake. J.R. Radcliffe taking us step by step here. He's sports reporter, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And yes, it is October 1st. And yes, there is baseball in Milwaukee again this year. Notable. Winner of tonight's game against the Nationals will move on to Los Angeles, taking on the Dodgers in a best-of-five NL Division Series. But if the Brewers lose tonight, it is season-ending. Are you a Brewers fan? Will you watch? What were the highlights of the season? And are you a season ticket holder? What keeps you coming back? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. J.R. Radcliffe is a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's in D.C. ahead of tonight's game at Nationals Park. He stays with us. J.R., let's put a wrap here on Christian Yelich. Going back, as you look at how he is recovering from the injury, what are you watching for? What needs to happen for him to be ready next season?
I mean, it sounds pretty likely that he's going to be totally fine. It was the projection of his, he had a fractured kneecap. The projection is it would be about 8 weeks before, maybe 8 to 10, maybe 8 to 11 weeks before he's at full strength. So that would put him well within the window of being back to full strength when spring training rolls around. I'm sure there's a handful of fans who are doing a little calculating and thinking maybe if we fudge on that a little bit, maybe it's 6 weeks instead of eight, and the Brewers somehow make a run of the World Series, you could see Christian Yelich back for the biggest games in you know, potentially in franchise history. Don't think that's going to happen. It seems like they're going to take it easy no matter what. Get him through rehab, which isn't exactly taking it easy, but get him get him healed up, and he'll be good to go for 2020.
Well, this is also former Brewers player Craig Counsell's 400th victory as the Brewers manager, second time leading the franchise to the playoffs. What does that mean for his career?
He's just a really tremendous story. He's a guy who grew up in Whitefish Bay. His father worked for the Milwaukee Brewers. He grew up around some of those teams in the late 80s and early 90s. And, he ended up going to play baseball at Notre Dame. He had his own big league career. He was on two stints with the Milwaukee Brewers as a player, was part of both of their playoff runs in 2008 and 2011. You know, you can't be a greater part of the fabric of the Brewers organization than Craig Counsell has been. So for him to come in and have success, you know, he's actually, oddly enough, he was hired in 2015. He's now officially the longest tenured manager in the National League with Bruce Bochy retiring in San Francisco and a couple recent firings. Clint Hurdle's out in Pittsburgh. Joe Maddon's out in Chicago. So that's kind of a surprising stat, but he gets a lot of credit for how this team has handled things in September, and rightfully so in these last couple Septembers, the way he's balanced the pitching staff, know just who the right guy is to bring in right situations. And he's not very emotional. He doesn't he seems to have a really good handle on balancing statistics versus just understanding his players, and it seems to pay off. I mean, he's had great success and is just a really, it's just a really cool story. He's a local product who's turned around or been a part of a turnaround of the local franchise into a pretty important, pretty solid franchise, MLB franchise.
And it seems players respond well in his environment.
Yeah, definitely. And he's definitely the right. Obviously, we only see him as he relates to the media, but he just really has a handle on. There are things that aren't worth getting too wrapped up about, things that just aren't worth getting too upset about. He's just got a really even keel sort of outlook on everything, and everybody seems to really like him. So he's thriving. It's working out very well in Milwaukee.
You mentioned earlier that it's a pretty uneven pitching matchup on the mound tonight between the Nationals and the Brewers. What's going on there?
Well, Max Scherzer for the Washington Nationals is, like I said, one of the best, really could be argued the best pitcher of the last decade. He's got 3 Cy Young Awards as the best pitcher in the league. He could have won that award last year if not for a pretty historic performance from Jacob deGrom of the New York Mets. So he finished 2nd in that voting last year. He's got no hitters to his name. He's pitched in 2015, I think he pitched the greatest game we've seen at Miller Park in Miller Park history when he almost threw a perfect game against the Brewers. And he's just got a phenomenal resume. He's a powerhouse. The only thing you can say about him, though, is that he did have some shoulder issues this year, some injuries, and when he came back full time in August, and he's been a little more hittable than he traditionally is. So he's also on some levels been very good, just as good as always. So he's still going to be a really tough matchup, but he might not be quite as daunting as he would be at other points in his career. if he can't last deep into the game, the Nationals have another very good starting pitcher named Steven Strasburg who will probably come in relief. They also have a third great starting pitcher named Patrick Corbin who could come in relief. He's a left-hander. So they've got some pretty powerful cannons that they can bring out. The Brewers aren't going to try to do that. They're not going to try to have a pitcher last six, seven innings. Brandon Woodruff, who's coming off his own injury, he'll start and, you know, maybe they get him through four innings, maybe five if everything breaks perfectly, but that's not what they're trying to do. They don't need him to go deep in the game. They're going to liberally use their bullpen arms and try to find the best matchups possible and see if they can piece together enough pitching to get through nine innings.
Yeah. J.R. Radcliffe with us, sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, as we take a look at the Brewers headed into the game tonight against the Nationals and what it means as we head into the playoffs here. Are you a Brewers fan? What does tonight mean to you? How do you feel about the Brewers in these last two playoff-making seasons? Did you get a chance to go to a game this season? What was it like? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jer, what does the Brewers' batting lineup look like tonight? Who's coming out strong?
Well, some of the staples in the lineup have been Trent Grisham will probably be leading off. He's a rookie outfielder who's shown some pretty nice flashes here in August and September when he joined the team. He's had a tremendous season in the minor leagues and was a guy who was one of their top prospects, kind of fell off the map a little bit and had such a huge bounce back year that he's been in the major leagues. Yasmani Grandal and Mike Moustakas are two of the guys that have been really the staples of this offense, particularly with Christian Yelich injured. Both those guys were signed as one-year free agents in the offseason. They have both paid off handsomely. Argument can be made that Grandal is the best catcher in the National League. He's durable, he's reliable, he hits for power, he pretty much is the whole package. And Moustakas, the third baseman, has battled injuries all year, but has really been in some big spots and hit some big home runs. Speaking of big home runs, Ryan Braun should hopefully be out there. He's been a little nicked up, but he's you know, recorded some of the biggest home runs in Brewers franchise history, including some that led to playoff appearances. He had a huge grand slam in St. Louis this year, so he should be out there. The biggest question mark that's facing them is what's going to happen with Lorenzo Cain, their center fielder, spectacular defensive center fielder. He's had a tough year offensively after having such a good one last year. A lot of that related to injuries. He sprained his ankle pretty badly in the second to last game of the season. He slid into home plate, into a collision with the catcher, and it mangled his ankle pretty badly. Mm. And it's unclear as of this morning if he's going to be available, if he's going to be on the roster. I would put it as pretty likely that he'll be out there. He's a very tough baseball player, and he's battled through injuries a lot in his career, especially defensively. It would be a huge value to have him out there. But if he's hobbled, you know, you only get 25 guys on a roster, and you don't want to put somebody out in the field who's only going to last a couple innings, non-pitcher category, and need to be replaced right away. So they have a tough decision with him. He's one of the major leaders, great professional, fantastic person, player, all of it. They really are going to want him on the field. That's going to be the biggest question mark going into the game.
A little more here on postseason. How have you seen fans celebrating this wild card spot in the last few days?
Man, I haven't been out in public that much because they've been on the road here at the end of the season. They clinched in Cincinnati, swept through the Reds, and then a lot of frustration when they went to Colorado and had a chance to win the division, which would have been big because they could have skipped this wild card game and gone straight to the division series and faced an Atlanta team that isn't as scary as the Dodgers. But so a little frustration. They lost that Saturday game. It was one of the bigger heartbreakers. I know fans were really down after that loss, and they should have been. They were one out away from winning, and a guy by the name of Sam Hilliard, a guy nobody has heard of in Milwaukee, hits a home run off the Brewers' best reliever, Josh Hader, to tie the game, and the Rockies end up winning. That really stole the opportunity from the Brewers to win the division. So that was a tough loss. That was tough after all the winning, after all the 18 of 20 victories. They sort of hit a roadblock in Colorado. So that's been a little bit of a storyline. How are they bouncing back from this sudden, the sudden end of their hot September where they lost three games in a row? The third one doesn't really count because by then they sort of knew their fate midway through that game, that they weren't going to win the Central, that they were headed to this game regardless of what happened. So a lot of players played in that game that would not have otherwise. But it does feel like maybe they ran out of their mojo and have to sort of rediscover it a little bit.
All right, JR, do you think the Brewers have a chance of making it to the World Series in the near future? Let's put some context around this.
Yeah, I would definitely put odds against it this year, given the injuries they have and just how they stack up against some of the teams in the postseason field. In the future, of course, it depends a little bit on, you know, talking about Lorenzo Cain. He's getting up there in years, and he's here for another 3 years on his contract. So it would be nice to see him try to bounce back, you know, be able to bounce back to his 2018 offensive performance if he stays healthy, and that would be a big boost for them. Christian Yelich is going to be here for 3 more years, so he's, and hopefully longer. So he, that's a pretty good window when you have possibly the best player in the National League on your team. They seem to have a system going that enables them to have success without frontline starting pitchers, although it would be nice if they could sign one. They do have a couple holes on this offense to fill, because Grandal, the catcher, is probably going to go elsewhere in free agency. Mike Moustakas might not be here next year. So you got to find a third baseman, you got to find a catcher, and there are no obvious options in the organization right now. So,
well, JR, I'm going to just chalk that up as a yes.
Yes. Okay, yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and host of the Brewers podcast. Coming up, we talk with UW System President Ray Cross about issues around enrollment, tuition, state budget funding. Back in a moment with President Cross right here on the Ideas Network. We're starting October talking with UW System President Ray Cross here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So we'll look at enrollment numbers, specifically UW-Madison having its lowest share of state residents enrolled in the freshman class in decades. We'll look at faculty numbers, tuition, state budget, campus building projects. What questions do you have about UW system enrollment or the tuition freeze? Are you a UW student or alum? What is your view on the UW? What do you want President Cross to know? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. UW System President Ray Cross is on a tour of UW schools, highlighting the value they bring to the state. The tour is called All in Wisconsin. President Cross, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, let's start with the declining percentage of Wisconsin students, specifically UW-Madison, as we see a smaller share in the freshman class. What's going on there?
Well, let's also start with the number of students. So this is the second largest freshman class from Wisconsin of Wisconsin students in the last decade. I think it's the fourth largest in the last 25 years. So the total number of students have increased on campus, and the number of Wisconsin students have increased significantly. So we are actually taking a larger percentage of the available high school students in Wisconsin since the high school numbers have dropped by over 10,000 in the last 10 years.
Right. You're seeing shrinking number of high school students. What about a drop in applicants or not?
Well, the drop in applicants is a bit misleading. We're actually seeing applications go up overall. So the interesting part to me is that on the one hand, the state wants us to enroll more Wisconsin students, and we are. This is not only are we enrolling, we're graduating more Wisconsin students. But in addition to that, the state is spending money in Chicago to attract students here. We are an automatic attraction. They're paying us to come here. So we, in our mind, this is a double win for the state of Wisconsin. This is an attraction for out-of-state students, and our challenge then is to keep them here and employ them in this workforce, make them Wisconsin residents in the end. That's part of this challenge.
Now, stepping back to 2015, when the system approved UW-Madison's request to lift a cap on the number of new students who could come from outside of Wisconsin and in Minnesota, how does this fit into the picture of what you're seeing right now going on with enrollment?
Well, there was also a cap, or a minimum, not a cap, put on the number of freshmen we had to enroll from Wisconsin. And that number was set at 3,600, and that was a large number at that time. This year we have 3,794, almost 3,800 freshmen from Wisconsin. So we're actually increasing the number of Wisconsin students. Additionally, Kate, we are actually bringing in more of the best and brightest, a larger number of students. I think 200 more students, as I recall, freshman students with ACT scores of 31 or higher in this most recent year, which is something I think we really needed to work on, and we've been working on it. The results seem to show we're having some success.
So we don't need caps is what you're saying, perhaps? We don't need caps, quotas, or, you know, what should you do there?
I don't have a problem with the minimum number of students that we must accept from Wisconsin. I think that's great. We are a public university, a Wisconsin public university. I also know that the state's spending money in Chicago to try to attract students to come here, not just students, employees. We're doing that. We're getting them to pay us to come here. So this is a double win for the state of Wisconsin. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can increase the number of students from Wisconsin, and we can attract students from out of state. I think that's a double win for the state.
Let's look at the decline in faculty. Between 2014 and 2017, the number of faculty within the UW system dropped by almost 8%. But you saw at the same time the number of administrators increasing. What is going on there?
Well, there are a number of things. First of all, student success is our primary goal. We want students who do attend to be successful. And at the same time, our graduation rates have gone up. Even though we have fewer students, I think we're somewhere around 180,000. Now we're down to about 173, which is, by the way, compared to the privates and the technical colleges, our drop is not nearly as significant. But in addition to that, part of our overall goal is to be successful. So you're seeing the word administrator is misleading as opposed to teaching in the classroom. So is a tutor a teacher, or is a counselor or an advisor? Those support structures are important to help students graduate, to get through this educational experience successfully. So you're seeing an increase in that. Additionally, every time the legislature, be it federal or state, passes a new regulation, it requires more reports, more follow-up, more administrative, non-teaching positions. So you see that with the Clery Act. You see that with all kinds of things that are passed. We have to add administrators just to fulfill those requirements. We have 57 plus reports we have to submit every year. It takes time to compile that and aggregate that data. Additionally, the whole IT cybersecurity area requires many more people than we ever imagined a long time ago. So it's not the ratio. There is no magic number. The magic number is to us is, can we increase the number of students graduating from this institution that start here and finish here? If students graduate, their student debt problems are much more minimal than they are if they don't graduate.
What do you make, though, of declining faculty numbers? You take UW-Oshkosh, for instance, a decline of faculty by 20 positions between 2014 and 2018.
Well, first of all, there is a relationship between the number of students and the number of faculty. So that process is part of the normal process, that give and take. So this could go back up easily as enrollment increases. There's a whole process throughout the system and how we use this fluctuating enrollment like an accordion to rightly relate the number of faculty to students. We're always behind some, so it takes a little while to catch up with that. But that's a normal part of the process.
We're talking with UW System President Ray Cross, looking at a number of issues facing the UW, with your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. What issues do you want to see the UW system tackle next? Are you currently a student or alum? Why did you choose UW schools? What was your experience like? Do you work within the system? What are your biggest challenges? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Marquette University down the road, Milwaukee, recently announced it would be cutting 2.5% of its staff. Meanwhile, the UW system is reviewing the way employees are compensated and trying to match university titles to the market. Where is the UW in that process of title and compensation review?
We call it Title and Total Comp, TTC, is an effort to try to match our titles with comparable titles and job descriptions nationwide. So we have accurate comparable data. You will hear different kinds of statements, well, we're paid less, or they're overpaid more, or it's hard to compare this position with another position. This is an effort that is actually going on nationwide at other organizations. How do we rightly create a job description that gives us the appropriate amount of comparable data so we can say, yes, in this market, this person is paid in this range. Therefore, in our market, it should be paid in this range. We expect that to be completed somewhere in the spring, maybe by the 1st of April, et cetera. It's an effort that will require a lot of communication because, as you know, Kate, every time you attempt to say, well, we're looking at your job description, employees get nervous, and rightly so. So we want to communicate the importance of this to them to effectively help us validate where we are in the marketplace.
Well, you need a pot of money for that, because what if compensations are wildly out of place for what some jobs are in the market?
Right now, we can't prove that. So that's the hard part to prove. Well, you say this, we say that, et cetera. We want to validate those differences, which gives us, I think, a much more objective argument in the end.
What will you accomplish then in the end? What will this How will this impact the UW system?
Well, it's the foundation for looking at how employees are paid, what they're compensated, how they're compensated. Total compensation includes obviously more than just money, too. So what kind of benefits are provided for employees in similar positions, et cetera?
Let's look. Let's bring in Linda now, joining us from Reedsburg. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank Ray for his effort to get the Dairy Hub Initiative taken care of to help Wisconsin dairy farmers and to get us a little bit more research to help us progress in the future.
Well, Linda, thanks so much for calling in. And President Cross, can you give us a little more information on what the Dairy Hub is?
Well, I'll try to do that. Thanks, Linda. We appreciate that. And our thanks also to the legislature for supporting that. And to the particularly the dairy community, but also the corn growers, soybean growers, et cetera, for helping us. This is a dairy state. We put it on our license plate. We brand it on just everything we do. We should be proud of that. The university was instrumental in making this a dairy state, moving from growing wheat around the turn of the century to becoming a dairy state, because we can grow forages better than we can grow grains. So in that process, right now with the dairy industry suffering the way it is, with the price of milk being what it is, it's important for us to prepare for the future. We don't have short-term answers for this, but how do we invest in the research, be it on environmental issues for dairy farmers, productivity issues, improvement of genetics, the implication of technology in the dairy industry? Wisconsin needs to be the dairy state, the state that everybody comes to for answers to questions about dairy issues. That's who we are, and let's take advantage of that. And we've done that before. We've invested in the dairy industry, and it's served us well. So I'm proud to support this and really pleased the legislature and the governor support it as well.
We're checking in with UW System President Ray Cross, rounding up a number of issues facing the UW enrollment as we've been talking about budget, tuition, compensation, building projects. Do you work in the UW? What are the challenges and opportunities you see in your work? Have you seen the effects of the tuition freeze on the system? What kinds of changes have you noticed? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back for more with President Ray Cross in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have UW System President Ray Cross here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are 13 UW System campuses across the state. We're getting up to speed on the pressing issues with students, faculty, administrators. What issues do you want the system to work on next? Did you leave the UW to work somewhere else? Why did you leave? Are you an alum? How do you describe your higher ed experience? Be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. And UW System President Ray Cross stays with us. We have Don in Ashland who emailed us to say that honor students with amazing credentials are being turned away from UW-Madison and toward other UW schools because of the inability to reach the requirement of a 26 ACT score. And Don is saying there should be additional weight placed on past academics and abilities and less so much stress on the ACT test.
Well, it is a what we would refer to as a holistic admissions process. So the ACT score or any test score are just one part of that. High school grades are included, courses you take, extracurricular activities, et cetera. It is a whole holistic process, John, so it's not the only thing that's considered.
Let's take James now in Madison. James, hi. Are you there, James? Hi.
Yes, hi. Yeah, I'm wondering if Ray Cross understands the plight of the trades in the state system. We're basically making the same money we were making in 2005 with frozen wages, virtually no raises since 2009. We are talking to the university, and we understand that the legislature controls our wages, but I'd like to see President Cross and other people in campus lobby the legislature to correct this. This is really, we find it's just despicable the way we're being treated.
James, thanks for the call. And who works in the trades on campus?
Well, James, I used to own a construction company, and I understand exactly what you're talking about, and I sympathize with that. And I want to assure you that we are actually working to increase compensation, not just for you and the trades, but also throughout the university, because we think that's our highest priority. And so I respectfully disagree slightly. We did have some success. We have secured minimal increases, but not to exceed CPI in the last few years. But there were a number of years where it was absolutely frozen. Wages were frozen. So I fully understand that. Just be assured that we are working on this. We're doing the best we can, and we certainly appreciate what the trades do in supporting and servicing of the structure, the infrastructure that provides the kind of opportunities for our students, and an incredibly important part of what makes a university successful. Thanks, James.
Well, what about the tuition freeze and that impact on the budget? In-state tuition at the undergraduate level has been frozen since 2013, and the budget that Governor Evers signed in July extended the freeze for another 2 years. Has the system had to find other pots of money to make budget?
Yes, finding other pots of money is kind of probably the wrong way to express that, Kate. Trying to figure out what, as James alluded to, what are our priorities and how do we make that happen? And yes, has the tuition freeze impacted or will it threaten? I don't think it's hurt quality yet, but it is, and it will. At this point, it will have been frozen for 8 years at our four-year institutions and 12 years at our two-year former UW College campuses. So that is an incredible challenge to us. Of course, our efforts are to secure increased investment, whatever source that might be.
What might sources of increased investment be? Would it be going to alums? Would it be where else do you generate revenue?
Well, from the state. So the state has to invest in this. And part of our whole All in Wisconsin tour is to help the public understand the incredible impact that the university has on everyone's lives. Today, we're facing challenges. You heard Linda talk earlier about the dairy industry and the challenges facing that fundamental sector in our society. The university is a part of solving that problem. Our challenges, the challenges faced by this state, be they in the healthcare field or agriculture or in manufacturing, the university needs to be a part of helping to solve that problem, just as we did back in the late 1800s with respect to dairy and forages. So helping the public realize that the university needs to be a more deeply embedded partner in their lives, including the businesses and communities we service, what the All in Wisconsin process is all about.
Have you had conversations with lawmakers recently that may suggest whether we would see an end to this freeze?
Well, we've certainly had conversations, not just recently, for a number of years, helping people understand the impact of this and saying to folks, and I think you heard in Governor Evers' proposal, or at least you saw it, he was not proposing to increase tuition, but he was proposing to increase the state's investment to offset that. There was some warmth to that from several legislators on both sides of the aisle. In the end, that didn't quite happen, but there seems to be an increasingly growing understanding that this has to change.
Let's look at building projects, capital investment. You have been pushing more funding in the state budget to repair and renovate, replace the aging infrastructure. Has the system been able to move ahead on those projects?
Well, that is the one wonderful outcome of a recent budget. This is probably the largest capital budget we've ever received in the history of the university. It's a wonderful validation on the part of the legislature of their understanding of the plight of our current physical infrastructure. We're not seeking sufficiently to increase to any large extent our square footage, but we do need to replace, repair, and renovate these spaces in order to attract, retain, and perform the role of an academic institution at this day in this day and age.
Talking with UW System President Ray Cross, in you as well, 800-642-1234. What issues do you want to see the UW system address next? What value do you place on the UW system and your connection to it? Joining the conversation, you can also email ideas at WPR.org. President Cross, let's talk about free speech on campus and the ever-present issue that colleges are facing around the country. Over the summer, the system started the process of getting its free speech policy written into state code, punishing students who violate others' free speech a certain number of times. Where is the system in this process?
Well, we do have a policy, and a portion of that policy, because it impacts student discipline, has to be included in administrative rules, and that's what this is about. I want to try to challenge some of your comments there. Students are there's free speech all over the campus, but if an individual or a group reserves a room and to speak, the process of how one protests within that room is what we're trying to be careful about, because this person has a right to speak. They've paid for the room. Individuals have a right to protest, and the people in the room have a right to hear. So if they come to hear this individual speak, then we're trying to make sure that individual has the opportunity to speak. In other words, the heckler's veto cannot forbid speaking. At the same time, we want protests to be lively, common. That's what the university is all about. How these are issues that are constantly in conflict. We want that to happen freely on the campus, as it does anywhere. We are not stifling any kind of free speech around campus. Unless a person reserves a room to speak, they should have the right to do that. And what we're trying to do is be reasonable and thoughtful about how that should occur.
Some have said this is having a chilling effect, though, on students, discouraging them from exercising free speech. What would you say?
I would disagree. I don't think it has. I think it's an effort to provide some guardrails, some principles that guard free speech. And I think there will always be dispute about how best to do that, because it's a challenge. But the university is, in my opinion, it's the reservoir, the place where we actually guard free speech, perhaps more than any other place in our society.
President Cross, thanks for coming by.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
Ray Cross is president of the UW system. He's currently on a tour of UW system schools, highlighting what they bring to the state. The tour is called All in Wisconsin. Next up, tomorrow, UW lacrosse. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on the Ideas Network.